been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is opening day of earnings season. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. It's the Best Stocks Now show. We have a little downwards drift in the market today. After hitting some new highs yesterday, the Dow is down 285 right now. It's at 49,304. I got a hunch we're going to be saying 50,000 here at some point in the near future. The S&P 500 is down 12. It's at 6,964, and I got a feeling we'll be saying 7,000 before too long. And the NASDAQ is down 13. It was up a bit this morning, and now it's drifted lower, down 10 points, 23,727 on the NASDAQ. We've got the Russell 2000 up a couple of points right now. Gold has been the story so far again in 2026 after a strong year yesterday. Gold really loved the news of the Jay Powell investigation, of all things. Gold is up 40 basis points today to $4,633 per ounce. That's just an incredible number. I can't even believe I'm saying that. Silver is up 4.4%. It's at $88.83. I never thought I'd be saying that on silver. And last but not least, Bitcoin is having a fairly good day today. It's up $1,592,224. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. We'll pick up where we left off yesterday. Yesterday was never a dull moment Monday.
No.
And a lot of controversy around, you know, Jay Powell and Trump and the feud and Jeannie Pirro, the Fox announcer, who's now, you know, in the, I think she's the DA for that district. She enters into the fray. Bessent enters into the fray. World bankers enter into the fray. And it's kind of an unnecessary distraction as far as I'm concerned. His time was up as the Fed will be up in May. And he probably would have moved on as a Fed governor, but now there's a good chance, I think, that he will stay as a Fed governor. The forward P.E. ratio of the S&P 500, that's a critical number that I look at every day. We're at 22.45 after yesterday's action. It's elevated. Your five-year average is 20. We're at 22.45 times earnings. That's the next 12 months' earnings projections, which will be a record haul of earnings for the S&P 500 this year and next year, if the analysts are right, and we continue on the course that we're on. 23 has been the top here recently, so we have to be wary of that. 22.45, that's based on the current S&P, which is ended at 6,977 yesterday, and the earnings estimates for the next 12 months, believe it or not, are $310.84. That's a five-fold increase.
Wow.
Since 2009, the bottom of the market. That's what's been driving the market higher. Indexes and stocks follow earnings. Just remember that, and it will keep you out of a lot of trouble and from making a lot of bad predictions in the market that don't turn out. Earnings in the stock market. And secondly, interest rates. Gold yesterday, holy cow, it's just unbelievable. The breakouts on a daily basis in Barrick Gold and New Gold and all these little gold stocks. The gold bugs are really having a good time. I need to go to a gold bug convention, Barry. That's got to be a happy place these days. But, you know, even then, they're mostly doomsday kind of people. They're storing gold.
Probably when
they're
happy, they're sad. I mean, it's like I always think of the best case scenario for gold is the worst case scenario for you.
Yeah, the end of the world is good for gold, but you know, nobody's going to be around to cash in on it.
It's a happy medium there.
And the silver bugs, they really having a whooping it up time. Man, I remember going to some of those small cities in Nevada, Tonopah, Ely, Mesquite, and all the old silver mines that are still there. Now they're probably being opened up again with the price of silver, what it is. So anyways, very heady times there in the precious metals market.
Yeah, so gold actually is on a I think they're on the longest monthly win streak since 08-09. So in terms of the gold against you know, beating the beating equities, I think it's I want to say it's about a 6 month win streak, or on track to be a 6 month win streak, which would be the longest since the financial crisis. So,
you know, and all you folks that are listening to the show and maybe say, you know what, I don't have enough money to be in the stock market. I like to hear about it and listen to it. You know, I had somebody comment to me, Bill Gunderson's going to teach a lesson here in Charleston on the stock market. What's he going to do? Teach us how to invest money that we don't have? You know, Robinhood has no minimum investment. None. You could literally buy 1,000 shares of a Greenland stock for about $160 or something like that. You could buy $20 worth of some stock. There is absolutely no minimum in the stock market. To me, it's better than placing these bets on you know, whether how many field goals such and such is going to kick in this week's playoff game against the Bears and stuff like that. I mean, this
your prop bets.
Yeah, I mean, you're at least you're investing in something that has lasting value, hopefully, and will increase in value. I've heard a lot of stories over the years of people that started out with a little bit of money and have turned it into a pretty tidy little nest egg and had fun along the way investing. No minimum investment. You can open an account for 20. I remember meeting with the guy. He says, Bill, I need to meet with you. This was in downtown San Diego. I said, well, you know, okay. The only time he could come was before work on like a Wednesday. So I got there early to the office, met with him. He wanted to open an account with $20. He says, I got $20. I said, well, you know, that was a while back, you know, when it cost $7 to make a trade. He would have been eaten up in two or three trades. He would have lost all his money. So anyways, you may as well learn about this because it's continuing to hit new all-time highs here. As gold and silver surge to new records on fears of increased Fed interference, and we'll get to that in a bit. As different parties weigh in on that latest controversy, the never a dull moment controversy. I did watch the news coming out of Iran yesterday. Not good. I looked at my wife. I said, this is not good. Now, Iran today is claiming that they've put down the rebellion. They've regained control. I don't know about that.
I think the death toll has supposedly jumped above, you know, and it's almost impossible to know, but, you know, jumped to over 2,000 now. I think around 500 or 600 when we were having, you know, hosting the show yesterday. So
that's just not a good thing, you know, and there's death toll estimates as high as 12,000. You know, Trump's walking a very delicate line there. He's still weighing a response. I mean, I think most of the world would like to see the mullahs and the ayatollahs out of office and some kind of democracy coming into Iran. But it's a very dark country. A lot of evil forces lurking underneath the ground, literally underneath the ground. You know, when they took out Hezbollah's leader, a guy that I had followed for many years and couldn't believe the grip he had on southern Lebanon, which was, what was his name, the leader of Hezbollah. But when Israel Army took him out in Beirut, Lebanon, that was the end of Hezbollah pretty much. And it almost seems like after a long reign of the mullahs that something's got to give. I think something's going to give here. But we have to watch this because it impacts a lot of things. It's a dangerous, very dangerous part of the world. It was Iranians that brought the Twin Towers down. You know, what I fear is Russia coming to Iran's aid or side and saying, U.S., you want to mess with Iran? Well, we've got Putin next to Iran, standing next to them. I don't know. It's just not a good situation. Well, we'll get to a lighter topic like inflation. Inflation when we come back. Have the price of ribeye steaks come down? No. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, a big, a very important number came in today on the economic front, and I'm sure Barry had some time to look through that. It was the monthly CPI, the consumer price inflation. It's what we, you pay, I pay at the grocery store, at the supermarket, the airline tickets, and on and on and on. And the number was pretty good. The number was pretty good, wouldn't you say, Barry?
Yeah, it came in. I mean, the primary one actually to look at the core inflation, which is what the Fed likes to focus on. That one, strip out the stuff we need, we actually need, right? Like food, energy, and shelter, or food and energy. But increased 0.2% month over month in December. That was lower than consensus was 0.3%. Also. On the year, core was increased 2.6%, so not far away from the closest we've been in a while, probably to that 2% number. So consensus was 2.7% there. So the core number actually came in under anticipated, and the overall number actually came in 0.1% over. So basically, a good good inflation report here if we're using it as a scorecard for potential rate cuts in the future. So,
yeah, but obviously prices are coming down in some areas. You know, housing prices seemingly are coming down, and the mortgage rates are coming down a little bit.
Interesting breakdown is energy. So I pulled up the full report here, and when you look at it, long term, if you look at year over year, utility piped gas was up 10.8%, electricity up 6.7%. The good news is gasoline actually brought that overall energy component was only 2.3%, but gasoline is down 3.4% over the last 12 months. So. You've really kind of traded, probably gas prices for some higher utility prices.
Well, and that's coming from the data centers, and there is fear that the data centers are going to drive up energy prices for the little guy, the consumer at home, trying to run a household. And when they got these massive data centers making these huge deals with these energy providers, that's a worry. Okay, Fed Powell's this whole situation, which I think is, we didn't need this at this time, but, it is what it is. It's never a dull moment with the Trump administration. There's usually something happening. Central bankers across the globe back Fed's Powell. Of course, they're going to back him because they're like-minded. They're compadres with each one another. And the criminal investigation is really over the huge cost overruns in refurbishing, revamping, remodeling the Fed building. U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro did not seek a sign-off from her bosses at the Justice Department. So it seems to be coming from her before subpoenaing the Federal Reserve. She has no plans to back down from an investigation into Chairman Jerome Powell. And I do know that one of the things that they're trying to rein in, obviously, you know, by bringing in Musk in the early days, was to really watch over taxpayer money, where taxpayer money goes. And I think that was probably one of the big drivers behind all of this. Although I read somewhere that taxpayer money's not really being... Is there any other money besides taxpayer money? It seems to me like it's the source of all money that the government gets.
Well, at least it had to come from something first, right? I mean, so, yeah, even if you have a fine or something, right, it's still, you know, the institution was created by taxpayer dollars, so...
But the guy I listen to the most these days, as far as the economy goes, is Bessent. And Bessent told Trump that the Department of Justice probe into Powell made a mess. An irate Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told Trump late Sunday that the Justice Department criminal probe into Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell made a mess and would hurt and could hurt the financial markets. Well, you know, you got to have faith before you buy U.S. Debt that there is a firewall between the Fed and
the executive branch. And the government in general.
And there's concern that now he'll stay on as a governor and he'll just vote no, you know, from this time until eternity on anything that...
Yeah, and basically, you know, the reasoning behind that is him staying on is that he can, you know, obviously, you know, kind of defend himself, I guess, against the investigation if he's inside, right, the Fed versus if he leaves in May and he's outside the Fed from then on.
He's saying that now Powell has dug in. It really made a mess of things. So that's where that stands. Now, here's your number one story of the day. I was thinking about this over the weekend. I went through a drive-through, got a burger and some fries, and Kraft Heinz. Wait till you see this invention. Now, I can't say that this is like an invention up there with Thomas Edison and. Did you see it? This little ketchup cup that's attached to the French fries.
No,
they announced Tuesday they've made a key invention. This is the first thing Heinz has come up with in 27 years, and if this is the best they can do, it's been a horrible stock. But they introduced the Heinz Dipper, a new French fry box with a built-in ketchup department designed to make it easier and less messy to eat fries with ketchup on the go. Now, I get all these little packages of ketchup. You know, I got... 27 million little packages of ketchup that I don't want to throw it away because there's still good ketchup in there, but maybe this will solve. So, anyways,
all
it's
fun
a
and games
fry.
Until you step on, you know, to you or one of the kids step on one of those ketchup packets,
especially on the white carpet.
And that's an interesting invention. You know what's been? You know what's the hardest thing for Heinz to do in the last 20 years? By the way, to make ketchup taste like we're used to ketchup tasting, particularly from McDonald's or fast food places that had no corn syrup. So the problem is they were trying to get rid of corn syrup out of ketchup, but Heinz for a long time couldn't make it taste like you're used to it tasting by using.
Just been a horrible stock. Not only is it the slow ketchup, it's the slow stock. Negative returns over the last 10 years. Now, when you're done with your fries, pop a pill. Eli Lilly, CFO, says obesity pill is on track for FDA nod in Q2. Well, Q2 starts in 6 weeks. And, you know, Novo Nordisk was the first to market with a pill, not the shot in the stomach. In an interview with Bloomberg News, Eli Lilly, chief financial officer, said that the Indiana-based pharma giant remains on track for potential FDA approval of its obesity pill, or Froglipron, which they're ramping up production of now, along with ketchup cups. We'll be right back. Don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. Back to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. And by the way, it is earnings season. It kicked off really officially this morning. J.P. Morgan didn't exactly kick the ball into the end zone, but they came up with an okay report. We'll get to that in a little bit. I saw Bank of New York Mellon, Delta Airlines, a few others. But earnings season is a very important period of time in the market. It comes along every 90 days, and it lasts about 70 days, it seems like. There's a couple of big weeks, maybe a couple of weeks from now, where you get the gusher coming in, when you get Google and Microsoft and NVIDIA is usually at the end, the AMDs of the world and some of your bigger, companies that really move the market. And every time a company reports earnings, it goes into the aggregate of the S&P 500 and they give guidance for the coming quarters, maybe the coming year, and even into next year. And those analysts sharpen their pencils, sit down at the keyboard, open up the spreadsheets, put in the new numbers, and come up with a new earnings per share estimate, either higher, lower, or the same where it is now. And every time a company reports, it impacts that aggregate number, which I watch so closely. If there's any one indicator to watch in the market, no, it's not moving averages, it's not the bullish bearish sentiment. For me, it's the earnings estimates, because that's what the stocks are taking their cue from, is the earnings estimates out over the next 12 months and out over the next 24 months. And I watch the movement in that and the trends in that regard. That's very, very critical. Trump's going to be in Michigan today. I wonder if he'll be staying at that nice little hotel we stay at out there in Bloomfield Hills.
Yeah.
I love going there. I can't wait to get back there this year. But he's going to tour Ford's factory in Dearborn. He's going to visit the Soundboard Theater at the Motor City Casino. That sounds like fun. And he's expected to speak with members of the Detroit Economic Club. So anyways, trying to help out the auto industry. In the meantime, GM's CEO, she's dug in, Mary Barra, as Ford backs down from their EV plans big time. I mean, they're totally did a 180.
They'll probably get a boost in their stock price by announcing that, would be my guess.
GM is all in on the EV. She sees that as the end game. So you have two very different philosophies coming from these two competitors, fierce competitors in the Motor City, GM and Ford, both publicly traded, the only two big ones, domestic automakers, along with Tesla, I guess, that are publicly traded. Stellantis is the other one. Stellantis, however, is headquartered in the Netherlands. That's where Chrysler and Jeep ended up. But Ford is backed off their EV plans quite a bit, although they're going to come out with the fully autonomous car by 2027. And Ford stock was actually breaking out to new highs, 52-week highs as of last week. And GM, in the meanwhile, is doubling down on the all. They want to be 100% EV down the road some point in time.
The defense stocks, of course, he's been putting a lot of pressure on the defense stocks to cut the dividends, cut the buybacks, ramp up production. L3 Harris Technologies, LHX, are popping this morning as the Department of Defense is proposing a $1 billion investment into LHX. And, of course, this is a totally different tact that this administration is taking versus previous administrations, where instead of giving companies money, they want shares in return. They want investment in the company. They've done that with several rare earth companies. They've done it with Intel, taking an investment in Intel. And now they want to take an investment in L3 Harris, which makes the rocket motors is what they really want them to increase and speed up the production. Now, we need more rockets in the world. They're in Melbourne, Florida. Where's Melbourne? Is that down by?
That's on the that's on the. It's probably just. It's kind of. I guess it's part of the Space Coast, just a little south of
Port Canaveral. That's what I was thinking. Must be down in that Space Coast area, which is a beautiful area of the world. L3 Harris is an $65 billion market cap company. The problem with the defense stocks, there just hasn't been consistent growth over the years. If the only one that's really, in my book, a growth stock at this point in the game is Raytheon, and that's the one he criticized. Trump had criticized Raytheon that they're doing too many buybacks and too many dividends and get to work on building more cruise missiles and things like this. But anyways, the defense stocks have done well under Trump. The drone stocks have done well under Trump. The rare earth stocks were in play yesterday, big time. Bessent, meeting with allies from around the world, Canada, Australia, Mexico, France, Germany, the UK, Japan, South Korea, and India, represents about 60% of the global demand for critical minerals. And Bessent was putting forth, we all need to work together on weaning ourselves away from being dependent on China's rare earths. And become self-sufficient, which I'm all for. I'm a big believer in self-sufficiency. Whether that not involves Greenland, I don't know, but we do have stores of rare earth here in the U.S. Australia has a lot. Canada has rare earth. Bessent said he's optimistic that nations will pursue prudent de-risking over decoupling and understand well the need for decisive action. You know, Bessent's really been a jack of all trades there at the White House in the administration.
Yeah, he speaks the market, right? I mean, that's what I like. That's the one benefit. I mean, I think of for him. If we think about the first administration, is Mnuchin. I mean, he kind of did that. I think behind the scenes, but not as much in front of the cameras. But you know, Bessent's background, obviously, I mean, you know, he was a regular on a lot of the, particularly Bloomberg, but was a regular on the financial channels. You know, prior to joining the administration,
yes, he's a very talented guy.
You know, he knows what we want. He knows what the market wants to hear. Right? I mean, that's really
yes. I mean, he was in the markets. He made a lot of money in the markets for other people and himself. Seems to be very level-headed. Linus Rare Earth CEO to step down after 12 years. And so now that's a big Australia one. LYSCF. I need to break off in the app a rare earth sector. It's a subsector of basic materials. You know, basic materials would include aluminum, chemicals, fertilizer, things like that. Your basic materials that you need for everyday life. But that rare earth, which really didn't get a lot of play, until the last few years here, Now all of a sudden, and I, you know, whether it's data center, something has really sparked these things and the critical need for these rare earths and probably the trade spat between us and China, where China uses rare earth as a big negotiating tool against us. Oh, well, we'll just cut off the rare earth supplies to you, America. And of course, America uses the high speed chips. Well, okay, then you can't have any NVIDIA chips. But anyways, I do have those rare earth stocks in my, and they would show up in the basic materials sector. So you can go into the app and you can click on the basic materials sector, and it will pull up the stocks in that group, in that sector, ranked in order by my proprietary ranking. And I gotta believe, and I do put a hyphen. It will say basic materials hyphen rare earth, and then usually hyphen what country they're from. China has a big rare earth stock. Australia has a big rare earth stock. Greenland has critical minerals. Canada has several. Argentina, South America has several. And the other one that's been moving here recently is lithium. Yesterday, Albemarle, which is North Carolina, just to the north of us, also SQM down in Chile, breaking out, Lithium Argentina breaking out to new all-time highs as lithium is in play once again. Okay, when we come back, a few earnings reports to talk about. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we were talking about, you know, the power, the electricity, the utility part of the CPI equation. And, of course, one of the issues driving it higher is this need by these data centers for power and more power. And I see an eye-popping target price rise here for GE Vernova, which we own. It's one of the 21 chosen stocks out of 5,300, by the way. That's how, you know, how picky and how demanding I am in the market to find only what I consider to be the best. And GE Vernova, currently, we consider to be one of the best large-cap growth stocks out there. It's $177 billion in market capitalization. It was spun off by GE when Larry Culp came in, has done a magnificent job. He divided the company into three, GE Aerospace, which is kind of the original company, and then he spun off GE Vernova, which is the power arm of GE, and he spun off the medical arm, which is a GE, GETC, I can't remember, something like that. It was GMED, maybe. It hasn't done as well as the other two, but here's what caught my eye, Barry. GLG Research maintained its buy rating and raised their target price from 805 to 1,087. 1,000, that's a huge upgrade.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Stocks, you know, do trade on upgrades. And, you know, obviously they're basing that on higher earnings estimates than what they see out there right now. Now, my price target is pretty lofty itself, but I do five-year price targets. And by the way, just to put this in perspective, GE Vernova is currently, I think it's at 650. Let me look that up. GE Vernova is 651.88. Which is not too far. Its all-time high is 677. I mean, you go back to just 2 years ago, it was $115 a share. So it's quadrupled since 2024. And, you know, my formula for best stocks now, one half of that formula is performance, raw performance, and performance against the rest of the market, which I call relative performance. That would also be known as relative strength or alpha, depending on which circle you run in. But GE Vernova has been outperforming the vast majority of stocks in the market. That's always a good thing, as long as the valuation remains, you know, sustainable. My target price on GE Vernova 5 years from now, that comes in the Gunderson valuation, which is fresh every single day. I have 1,174. But that's 5 years from now, and this group, I've never heard of them, GLG Resource, 1,087 is their target price. So I don't know if that's 1 year from now, 2 years from now. It doesn't say here in the article. But anyways, that's a significant rise, and we continue. Now, on the other hand, it's a market, right? You can't have buyers without sellers. We got Baird downgrading GE Vernova, saying that the price, the current price, everything's baked into the cake. But they still see them as a core holding. Right now they think it's ahead of itself. No, I don't think so. I'm kind of, I think that five-year target price, that's 80% upside potential. It still meets my valuation criteria. I like 80% or more upside potential, and it currently meets that momentum criteria, which is also very important. I don't like momentum without a good valuation, and I don't like a good valuation without momentum. I like the two of them coming together. That's like a canoe with the oars on both sides of that canoe rowing along in perfect unison and moving that ship forward. Semiconductor sales jumped 21% year-over-year, backed by AI surge. That's according to Gartner. We've been talking about the semis. I have been talking about the semis since I got in the business back in the late 90s. I've watched the growth of the semiconductor sector. The road, the information highway is lined with chips, and it's only gotten more and more chips needed in today's world than ever before with this whole AI thing. AMD was having a real good day. It's still up almost 5% this morning. It was up about 7% at one time this morning. We continue to choose AMD as one of those 21 special large cap growth stocks in the world today for our premier growth portfolio, which is off to a very good start so far in 2026. You're not going to find Heinz Ketchup. You're not going to find Johnson & Johnson or Kellogg or Procter & Gamble or dinosaurs of yesteryear, AT&T, IBM, Cisco. Yes, they're good companies, but they're growing in the low single digits. That's where they are in their life cycles today, and we don't like low single digits. All things being equal, you're going to get low single-digit returns on those stocks. Well, we never got to the earnings, but suffice it to say, we'll take a look at the two that did report. J.P. Morgan is down 2.5%. If I was going to own one large bank stock, it would be J.P. Morgan, but it doesn't make it to my cut of those 21 best in the world today growth stocks. It's a good one, but there's better ones. And then the other one was Delta that reported today, and Delta is down 1.6%. Okay, well, that does it for another hour of the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time, whatever market you are in, and we'll be hitting the road soon. And visiting these cities that we're in and meeting the folks and having talks with individuals about their portfolios. And I'll be teaching a workshop at every stop along the way. Houston is first on our list. We just don't have that final date, time, venue yet, hopefully by the end of today. If you'd like to sign up for 4 weeks of the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com, which includes the live trading alerts and access to this all-powerful app that I invented. And if you'd like to just set up an appointment with us and discuss your portfolios, if you're not happy where you're at or trying to do it yourself, set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.